Backseat Producers, episode number 80, 300. Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Adam.
And this is Darren.
And we are the Backseat Producers. Darren has been...
I was belching. Don't give me that look. You interrupted me.
I always interrupt you doing something.
I know.
Most of the time it's planned. This time it wasn't. Darren has been part of the Backseat Producers...
Longer than you have. Well,
in a manner of speaking...
Backseat Producers, we've both been in since the beginning.
That's true.
She's been longer than
I go back to Fanboy Smackdown. Yeah.
Actually, Darren goes back to the discussion where I think Darren was there like 10 minutes after I came up with the name Fanboy Smackdown. Hey, I got this great idea for the name of the podcast I'm eventually going to do.
Lies, I'll never get off the ground.
But you did it. You did it, and I supplied you with the logo for the first podcast. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, we had the... Darren's been there since the beginning.
I guess for anyone that doesn't know, I write the print reviews that you have on the website.
Yep.
A lot of them, anyway. And I guess with this episode, you might invite to talk... With this episode, if you have iTunes, you'll see... Or I guess anything that shows you the graphic.
Yep.
You'll see the new Backseat Producers logo.
Yeah, we got the new... Did we talk about the new logo?
I don't think we talked about the new... Yeah, we did.
I think we mentioned it before.
Yeah.
In the episode that may or may not get released.
Yeah, that may or may not happen. Anyway, it is hot.
Yes, the logo...
I'm glad you guys like it.
We are thrilled about the new logo.
Talk about that sweet logo.
Yes, we are also... streaming this out live to the inner tubes. Mm-hmm.
This is our second try on that. The first one, I just listened to the audio. I may or may not make it, which is a shame because I think it was one of our strongest episodes in a while.
Sad. That is really sad.
The content was fantastic.
The sound sucks, but the content was incredible.
So we're going to have a debate about what we do with it.
It could be a special.
I was thinking of that. I was thinking about releasing that just as a... As a special, hey, we know the audio sucks, so we're not really releasing this as a regular podcast.
For everybody who's asking what the problem is, there was a weird echo. You could hear the Ustream feed behind us talking. So I would say something, and then 3 seconds later, you would hear me say it again in the background, and it's really annoying. I got maybe 5 minutes into the editing. I'm like, oh, this is... We're done with this.
It's like the old Bob and Doug McKenzie Doppler effect.
Exactly.
So yeah, we've got the new logos, and tomorrow, so it'll be like 2 weeks old probably by the time we release this, we will have t-shirts with the new logo on them.
I'm so stoked for those t-shirts.
I am too. I cannot wait.
Well, now that I know I can't wait to see it. I'm gonna
like rip off my shirt in the t-shirt shop and just change into mine right there. I will terrify the poor woman behind the counter.
I don't think I would.
I guess they'll alert the authorities on that when you do.
They might. But you know what's going to happen? Those police are going to show up and say, that's a hot t-shirt. Just get in the back of the car.
You'll bribe them with a t-shirt, right?
That's true. Don't worry about it. Hey, baby, I got 29 more. Let's go.
You give them each two and you're going to ride to Archon.
That's right.
Police escort.
That would be hot. Maybe I could get a ride home one of the nights. That would be even better.
Okay, so what are we here to talk about tonight?
300.
I'm stoked about talking about this. That's all I got.
Just throwing it out there?
Just tossing it out there.
For me, it was actually in my top 10 list. I did it for the year it came out. What was it, 2006 or 2007?
Yeah, it was last year.
It was last year.
It was last year.
Yeah, that's right, because my number one list. My number one that I put on the list was, of course, Grindhouse.
Yep.
but my I think 300 was like number four.
We'll have to do Grindhouse at some point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you seen them both?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
We'll have to talk about them.
Yeah, okay.
I need to watch the second one again because I was watching it.
Death Proof.
Because I watched it really late at night. Mm-hmm. I think I started watching them at like midnight.
Yeah.
So by the time I got to watching it, I was fading.
Well, we can save that for the discussion on it.
No.
I can go into every reason why you would do that too.
Yeah. I was starting to fade. It was late though.
Okay.
So 300.
High level review. It's in your top 10, so I'm going to assume that you liked it.
That's a safe assumption.
All right.
Yeah.
I don't want to assume anything wild out there. Tony, what'd you think? High level.
I'm going to preface my comment by saying I had low expectations.
Okay.
Because I'm not a big Frank Miller fan.
Yeah, coming in here tonight.
And that's, I mean, I'll preface it by saying that.
Is it because he ruined Superman for you?
Mostly. He didn't ruin Superman for me. He doesn't know how to write Superman.
He mocked the idea of Superman.
Let me just put it that way. He doesn't know how to write Superman.
All right.
So that aside, I took a look at this movie for what it was, and I thought it absolutely succeeded what it was trying to do. I thought it pulled it off very well. I liked it.
Fantastic.
I enjoyed 300. That's all I got to say. Till we start to break into it.
Yeah.
Which is now.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody want to give the synopsis?
Absolutely.
Bam! Boom! There it go.
Well, basically, 300 is a retelling of the epic story of the 300 Spartans and how they stood against Xerxes' army, Persian army, as they were coming to invade Greece. Now, Xerxes actually had set up a pretty good deal for the Greeks, but the Spartans actually, I believe, coming from a slave background, saw that any sort of and saw that following anybody else was almost going back to enslavement for them, and they had become accustomed as free men.
Well, I always took it more as because the Spartans themselves historically were slavers, right? So I was talking about like, yeah, that whole slavery thing. It sucks to be the slave. Not into that.
Yeah. Well, and
I thought they'd come, but I'm not for sure. I'm not really.
Yes. Well, no. I think we're both right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think they came from slavery and then were slavers. So it's like, yeah, not so much.
Yeah, the Spartans have an interesting and mixed history. Don't use this movie as factual reference.
Well, you can use some of the movie as factual reference.
There is some of it because the Battle of Thermopylae happened.
The 300 happened. I mean
that event happened.
True.
And Xerxes' invasion. I mean, this all happened. Yes, it's just the way Miller has set this up. The way Frank Miller has set this up when it starts off is
he sets it up as an allegory that it wasn't.
There was a lot of dramatization.
Yeah.
Well, it's a story being told to inspire the other Spartans. That's how it plays out in the end. Delios is relating this story at this point, and so as such, it's becoming a bit of a tall tale as he's telling it too. Miller is, of course, doing things with this that is.
He brings his own style to it.
Absolutely.
And it shows through a lot.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, Miller is known for very violent work, and one thing that he insisted on when he was doing this, when he was first doing the comic, was it had to be as violent as can be.
I love the comments here. Xerxes was 11 feet tall.
Yeah.
Oh, God, don't use it as facts. Use it to inspire you to find the real history. That's awesome.
And that's how it should be, too.
And you guys, really, if you're listening to this, Wednesday nights, there's not really anything better to do.
True.
At 9 o'clock. I'm looking over at the DVR and what's recording right now that Julie has set up. Lipstick Jungle and Dirty Sexy Money. So... Come on.
You can
pause one of those programs and listen to us live.
All right, guys.
And join in this conversation.
I think we've wasted enough time on the unimportant parts of 300. I got to ask you guys a serious question.
podcast.
This is probably going to tax your mental prowess to the absolute limit.
Oh, where are we going?
Did you or did you not notice Gerard Butler's beard getting bigger as the movie progressed?
Yes.
I mean,
actually, no, I didn't. I didn't really fall into that. But I probably could go back and watch
you
it.
You missed the movie.
No. That was, well, no, but it was one of those details that I'm not necessarily looking for either. You know, I mean,
I'm telling
you,
by the ending scene of the movie, that thing was gigantic. It was like 3/4 of the screen. I had a huge TV, so maybe.
Well,
it was
so that. Do I. I watched it in HD too. So. No, I didn't. I really wasn't. Really
the
wasn't.
The beard
for
was
that.
An allegory.
This is St. Louis. Okay. Anyway, back on track. Back to the side plots. Acting. Let's just run down the line of all the kind
high
of
level
meta
technical
points.
Yep. The technical points.
Acting.
First rate. It was a breakout role for Gerard Butler.
I'm going to go ahead and agree with you. Actually, I really like Gerard Butler in this. He was... I've seen him in some other stuff.
Right.
He was a good Dracula in Dracula 2000.
Sure.
He was...
He's in Tomb Raider. He was in Reign of Fire.
Yes. Reign of Fire, I thought so. So
well,
he was mediocre
there. We'll disagree on that. But,
So I was cool with Gerard Butler. Let's see, you got Faramir.
Right, that was David Wenham. David,
you and your facts.
Well, David Wenham's been in a few things. He was Boromir's brother, obviously, in Lord of the Rings. He was also Van Helsing's Q in the movie Van Helsing. And and Wenham's in other things, too. But he was terrific. I mean, he has a great voice for doing the narration of the film.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. He was good. He was good as the narrator.
Right. And, of course, we had Lena Headey in this, too. People know best today as Sarah Connor on Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles, but she was Gorgo.
No way!
Yeah, wait.
Oh, that's awesome.
She was Gorgo, Leonidas' wife.
That's
in this film.
That's badass. And I have a special connection with the movie just because my wife's mother is a full-blooded, born in Sparta during World War II Spartan woman. And so I deal with a lot of that.
That explains so much about Melina.
Yeah, no kidding. That I deal with a lot of that spear through Persian Absolutely. Thing when I go home at night. So actually, that sounds very, very gay. So
like that's the gayest thing we've said on this podcast.
Yeah, no kidding.
Come on.
Okay.
And T. Morris wasn't even involved.
Any comments on acting, Tony?
That was over the top, but appropriately so.
Okay. Okay. Good.
I mean, I think it deserved it. It.
We're gonna roll right into that.
The thing is,
the thing is,
this movie did what it did, and it's set out to be over the top, to be hyper violent, to be hyper stylized.
Yep.
To not rely on dialogue. It wasn't well written, but neither was the graphic novel. It wasn't about that.
It wasn't about the story. It was about the visuals. Stunning.
Yes.
Every single visual shot was incredible. Everything was so stylized, so artistic. Yeah, just like Sin City. I agree with Stingray here. I think this was better than Sin City.
It's up there with Sin City.
It's different, but it's the
two movies from the same author, basically, and they are probably, at least in my opinion, the most faithful print adaptations ever in film.
I will not disagree with that. In fact, I will go ahead and toss my chips on your side of the table, because if you watch the movie, you can flip through the graphic novel.
Sure, and you can do the same thing on Sin City.
Yep.
I think what makes Sin City more interesting for me is the different stories. That there are different stories in it. It's not one narrative, and it doesn't rely on one narrative to hold your stylistic interest.
Right.
Where Sin City for me was better just because it was smaller. There were smaller chunks to it.
And I preferred 300 because this is more of a preference between the two of us. Mm-hmm. I prefer the single logical narrative, and in fact, I like a narrator. I loved the narration of it because it was like the scenes where you got Leonidas looking over at the ships, and it's not just the visuals, like, because the visuals are stunning. They got the storm and the ships are crashing, everybody's dying, and then you've got the narration on top of it, where the guy is just describing the marvelous statue that is Leonidas. Everybody's cheering in the background, but he comments about how Leonidas doesn't move; he just waits. That was badass to me.
And see, for me, looking at this as a writer, I think that cheats it, but that's how the comic book did it. Mm-hmm. And their goal was to emulate the comic book, or the graphic novel, however you want to put it. And so it succeeds in that, but I think that was actually a failing in the comic book story. Narration for me is somebody is insecure with their storytelling. Mm-hmm. And that's how this one, that's how it comes off. Again, that's not the point of this.
Yeah, exactly.
The point is to emulate what was done in the graphic novel. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're trying to do 300 as was visualized by Frank Miller, as was conceptualized, but bring your own take to it in film, I think one of the smart choices would be to remove the narration and let the visuals speak to that. Because really, if you didn't have them telling you that, you'd see it. You'd see everybody flipping out and going crazy and cheering, mm-hmm. and him just stoic. Mm. It didn't need to be said.
It may not have needed to be said, it's a nice punctuation.
It's a nice punctuation because he's speaking for what you should be feeling as the Everyman. And I agree with you that it's kind of a cop-out because, yeah, the scene should be powerful enough that you get that sense anyway. That the average consumer of the media should look at this and say, everybody in the background is just flipping out and laughing and pointing and jeering, and then you got the one guy who's the Rock.
See, though, I think for a mainstream audience, the narration is more fitting. I think that's the talking to the mainstream. I think if they were going to go for more of an artsy, mm-hmm. cerebral idea of it, some of the violence would have been toned down. The stylism would still be there.
Right.
But remove big part of the narration and let the story just be told visually. Mm-hmm. Which I think there's just a lacking there because the story can so be told visually, with this incredible style. Yeah. And then, I mean, if we're going to break it down, I mean, this is a failing of the graphic novel, is that it dumbs down the material by telling you what's happening. That's just my take on it.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that.
I see your point and how you're describing it. At the same time, though, it doesn't bother me that he does it at all inside of it. And you mentioned the mainstream audience. Well, the mainstream audience made this a big hit too.
But that's not what the movie was about. The movie was not about being cerebral, being artsy.
No, you're absolutely right. It was.
Well, I would argue that it was more about being artsy than
it was more about being stylistic,
More about being state of the art than maybe artsy in some ways or another. So
artsy, here's an interesting artsy question. in term of film.
Okay, all right. Yeah, not artsy in terms of film. Not
I'm talking like
bizarre
art film.
Black and white indie film. The style of 300 and Sin City in 20 years. Do you think that they'll hold up?
That's a good question. Good question, Stuart.
I think that they will.
I think it'll be looked at as the start of something. I mean, it will be, technology is just going to get better.
Yeah, technology is going to get better, but I don't know that there were technical limitations that kept the movie from being more exact to the graphic novel.
There are no limitations there.
Because you could have animated it, but I think that is as good as you are. That is as close an adaptation.
It's amazing.
They had to have animated some of the parts of the people.
Oh, it gets even deeper. Than that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a scene at one point where you see a spear tip, And they actually CGI'd that tip to be sharper than what it was, than what the actual prop was that they had.
It's just
that exacting.
Sure.
I mean, one of the nice things that the HD DVD version has, and yeah, I know I've got the loser in the HD technology, but I'm still happy with my player.
Hey, it's cheap. You can get the media cheap right
and
now.
And the nice thing was that 300 had a picture-in-picture process where you could basically watch it blue screen. You could watch the whole movie.
Really?
You could watch the whole movie. It was a picture-in-picture. You watch the whole movie as without all everything else thrown in.
Oh, that'd be cool. Awesome. That would be really neat to see.
It is very, very nice. And it's amazing. Director Zack Snyder talks about this at one point or another where they did take that spear tip. And they just enhanced the hell out of it, so it was even sharper than what they would have been back in the day.
Yeah, and that was, to me, the whole point of the movie. Everything was over the top. Everything was ridiculous. And if you walk into the movie and you're like, oh, well, that's historically inaccurate, or, oh, that would never happen, it's like, yeah, you missed the point, dude.
Absolutely.
It's like, yeah. Everything was over the top. The things that weren't over the top were the things that were out of place. Like, I expected the conversations between him and his wife to be, like, breast-beating yelling matches. And I was like, all the domestic scenes were really out of place for me. Because they weren't as over the top.
Well,
because they were the subtle scenes.
And I think that, to me, though, that was the sort of thing that enhanced Leonidas' character a little bit.
Yeah, and see, that's one of the things that, I mean, because it had been a while since I'd read the graphic novel, he almost seemed to take liberties in those scenes as far as the story that was told in those scenes, because I don't remember those love scenes being as wordy,
right.
especially in the scenes with the domestic conversations. I don't remember them being that extended.
Probably not, but that it wouldn't surprise
me. It added to character, but I think you're right. It was a little bit out of place.
It was a little awkward just because of the transition between you've got 300 mostly naked Spartan men who have been killing Persians all day. Then we go back home.
And oh, you're talking about the later scenes now.
I'm talking about the stuff that earlier on.
I'm talking kind of both. I mean, just because.
Well, the
opening where they go through the backstory, and then the next thing you have his interaction with his kid. Even he's beating the crap out of his kid. All right, I can see that's a little bit over the top. And then after he deals with the messenger, you've still got that kind of jarring reaction where he starts dealing with his wife, and he's not nearly as harsh as he is with his wife.
I think part of what they were trying to stress, though, with that was basically Gorgo being as much of a scene. Leonidas, maybe historically inaccurate, but Leonidas was basically he ruled his kingdom with her, and she was a backbone to him with it.
Believe me, I get a lot of with the Spartan women thing. Trust me,
right. And one thing I actually was pointing out in the extras, about the Spartan women as well, was that they were literally seen as the last line of defense for Sparta. That they were supposed to be almost as able warriors as the men were.
You know, after this, I'm going to completely jump this conversation to somewhere else just because I can. So the movie comes out, right? And there's one of the first battle scenes. Leonidas is running through the crowd.
The
continuous action shot where
right.
it's just him and he breaks free from the
right.
Like there's the charge on both sides, so the Spartans are kind of behind him and he's leading the charge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's spearing people and he's kicking ass and whatever.
Camera zooming in and out.
Yeah, the camera zooming in and out, and then they got the scene where he pulls back the spear and he's gonna throw it and he gets his arm out and it's like, oh my god. Belinda's mom has that statue in her house. It's like, this was something that she brought with her from Sparta. And I'm like, this is probably the most badass thing I have ever seen in my life.
I'm glad you mentioned that scene, though, because that...
That scene was incredible.
If there is a single scene that basically can kind of sum up that film, that one will do it.
Yeah.
As far as the kind of visceral feeling you want to get out of it, that scene will actually absolutely do it. It's also the other thing that's really nice with that is Zack Snyder, the way he made this. He is translating comic book action to you in a way that actually, it's like comic book action. You're zooming in and zooming out and getting the important points. And every time I watch it, I've got to rewind it and watch it again as I'm seeing it.
Yeah, I don't think I can tell you how many times I've seen that. I think the first movie we watched when we got our big screen was that movie. I think we've seen it 6-7 times since then. Less than a year. Maybe 6 months. Okay, we're going to have to get into the spoiler section before I start talking about more of this.
All right. Though, what, we're spoiling a story that's 3,000 years?
Well, it's hardly the first time it's been on screen.
Yeah, but the manner in which the movie ends is...
I guess that's one thing we ought to mention about this anyway, is that Frank Miller's original inspiration for this thing was a movie, I'm trying to remember, I can't remember the exact date, it was late 50s or else early 60s, called The 300 Spartans.
Yeah, I've seen it. Phil owns it, oddly enough.
I own it, too.
Surprise. I think Phil is descended from Spartans somewhere along the line.
Yeah, and that had Jeffrey Hunter in it as Leonidas, I believe, and Jeffrey Hunter is best known as being Captain Christopher Pike on Star Trek The Menagerie.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, so
let's go ahead and bust this.
Let's go ahead and take a break, and then we'll come back for spoilers. Hey, this is Tony, and this is The Break. But I wanted to tell you about a new podcast that I've been listening to. Actually, it's not very new, but it's new to me. It's called The Sly Crooner. This guy is awesome. Check him out. He sings. He tells stories. He's hip. He's swank. And living swank is the best revenge. Check it out at slycrooner.com. You will not be disappointed. All right, so we're back.
That's commanding, Tony. Thank
you. You're welcome.
Who wants to have sex with me?
Way to bring in something from the break.
Yep. You know, if anybody's wondering where that actually came from, if you had been on Ustream tonight while we were actually streaming this live, you would know.
Very good. And you'd know who won the conversation.
Yep, very true.
Who won the night?
Who won the night? So, the spoilers.
Spoilers.
I thought the ending... I'm really getting tired of the ending scene where the guy has to splay out like he's on the cross. Really getting tired of that scene. Really getting tired of it.
Well, I can see that if you're doing it in a movie that's doing it badly. This one didn't do it badly, though.
I think it always does it badly. I'm also getting
tired. It's a little overwrought.
I am also getting tired of the freedom speech. It's like, oh, must this permeate
this
movie?
That's why this movie and this story was an allegory for something that it wasn't,
yes,
that historically this was not about.
It's like, where...
Big,
what
big,
agenda
huge.
Are you putting on this? Because there is no agenda here.
Yeah, I mean...
Lionel has died for my sins.
The whole freedom and, standing up for your country thing. I'm sorry, Spartans... If you really take a look at their culture, probably the last thing they were truly about was freedom. It was...
The last thing they were about was your freedom.
Seriously. It's all about fighting. Their whole lifestyle was war.
Yeah,
that was...
He says that in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
But then they go on to talk about freedom and how they're standing up for a free Greece and all this...
Well, I mean, free Sparta if you get into it early on, they make a comment about the boy lovers of the Athenians, and which basically reflects to a thing that all of Greece was not necessarily united by any means.
But at the same time, they say the boy lovers, the Athenians. You know what? When those soldiers went out, homosexuality was commonplace.
Absolutely.
And normal.
Yeah, it was.
So you're playing information to an audience who would attach homosexuality to something that wasn't there. I mean, again, this is not problems. This isn't problems with the movie, though. This goes back to the source.
Yeah,
freedom to enslave everyone else.
It seemed to me that it was just as out of place as the same freedom speech that was in Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. It's like, what is going on here?
Saw it at World's End anyway. After number two, I was done with that. I didn't even want to see the second one.
I kind of wish I hadn't seen it, but yeah. If I could unsee it, I would.
I got dragged into the second film. I tell you, I had lost all interest in sword and sandal movies until 300 came out. I'd seen Troy, I'd seen Alexander. Wasn't thrilled by either one of those. I'm trying to remember the Ridley Scott.
Listen, hold on.
Gladiator.
Gladiator, I liked.
Alexander had Colin Farrell's ballsack. Come on, guys. Come on. You got to recognize the power, the moving prowess of that movie.
Yeah, and Oliver Stone since released it twice again in forms that he thought were even better. No, I just lost all interest in these things because I don't know, they'd gotten dry, and 300 was to me a fresh take on the genre.
Yeah, I don't get me wrong, I totally dug the entire movie. It's just that scene, the freedom speech is ranking just underneath the celebration scene for me in movies. It's like the celebration scene where they flashed, everybody's clapping and laughing. Wasting my money.
And unfortunately, they really couldn't have that in this movie.
No, it would have been clever if they could have. It's like all the corpses are clapping.
Because they would have been happy. They would have been happy. They would have been happy. We died in battle!
Well, that was good for the Spartans, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was their whole point.
That was pretty ridiculous.
Stingray's got it right, though. That was one of the controversies.
Yeah, so Stingray's throwing out. You know what I loved about this movie was the reaction it got. Half the haters felt it was a conservative propaganda piece. The other half thought it was a liberal propaganda piece.
This is almost exactly like and I think Stuart actually made this comment on Twitter the other day, the first presidential debate, everybody who was for Obama going into it, Obama rocked that debate.
Absolutely.
Who wanted Obama or McCain to win, McCain totally trounced Obama. I didn't even watch the debates, and it's like, okay, so absolutely nothing was decided.
Any extreme political group can turn whatever they want to their cause.
Sure, political, religious, I mean, it's...
Yeah,
anybody's going to take from this what you will.
I never got the sense of a political
income one way or another. I got more the sense of just this was a thrilling story that inspired Frank Miller, and they wanted to tell it as true as it could be.
Clearly the political agenda.
It attached some anachronistic themes to make it more palatable for a modern audience.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I mean,
really, with the kind of movie they're making, they don't want to necessarily get into the politics of Sparta and Athens.
Absolutely.
And the city-states.
No, you're right.
It's not what the movie's about. So the best thing they could do was anachronistically put it into terms that an American audience will understand.
Right.
They kind of overlay that, you know, the climate of now into that. So,
which
of
every
course,
movie
people,
has done for the last 7
people
years.
People are going to see in that what they're going to see in it.
All right, I gotta make this confession here. You can call me a racist if you want, but after the movie, I wanted to go spear some Persians. I gotta be real.
Well, who wasn't really, though?
Real honestly, I had my loincloth out. I was oiled. I had my spear.
You're oiled all the time.
You were ready to go after the immortals more than anything else, right?
I was.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. And afterwards, I was like, this isn't me. This movie has changed me. It's moved me in a way I never wanted to be moved. So
I'll tell you, one thing I did like about it was they didn't feel the need to kill Xerxes. That it was enough that he bled.
That was cool because it was. If they had changed the historical accuracy of the story that much, then I would have called BS on the movie.
Right.
But
like yeah, like anything, like everything else, it was in Shenzhen.
Well, yeah,
but I mean, you can't just kill. Even you can't just kill the leader of Persia willy nilly and say that it happened. I mean, come on.
No, it happened.
Don't worry about it, Tony. Minor events in history. Or minor retcons.
Actually, there's another thing about Xerxes, coming back into another little fun fact, basically. He was played by an actor named Rodrigo. I'm trying to remember his last name. Anyway, this guy has been seen before. He was on Lost. He was Apollo on Lost.
What?
I kid you.
You
were
a font of knowledge that makes me uncomfortable.
He was Apollo on Lost, and actually, I think he ended up on Law and Order. And
that's awesome.
Everybody ends up on Law and Order. Kevin Smith has been on Law and Order.
Eventually, well, Dick Wolf employs a lot of people. Yes.
if you're a working actor in New York, you've been on
Dick
Law and Order.
Dick Wolf is pulling the strings.
And or Homicide, Life in the Street, and or. The Wire.
Well, I just thought that was interesting because 300 came out around the same time that he was appearing on Lost.
Too. Oh, okay.
So he was Apollo of Nikki and Apollo, who everybody hated. But you know.
What did you think about the overplaying of the Persians, of the guy who betrays them? That kind of, because like, they got the weird butcher guy with no arms, but he's got swords for arms. He's decapitating people.
They over. I mean,
it's part of the tall tale aspect of the whole narration. I mean,
I've heard complaints among the masses about how well it's just ridiculous that everything is.
When they had that, I mean, the one thing that was, there were points that were just completely ridiculous. But at the same time, they started the movie off, the story off with Leonidas' story about the wolf.
Badass.
But the portrayal, the portrayal of the wolf in that story was this thing that was like 20 feet tall with glowing eyes. I mean, it was like, it was completely ridiculous, but for the tall tale aspect of it,
well,
it
fit. I thought that was a cool way to start the movie because it was, listen, sets the tone.
It not only sets the tone, but it also
it's
tells
a prologue.
You, this is how Leonidas takes out. It's exactly the same way as using the hot gates. Mm-hmm. The wolf comes in between. He uses the environment around him to take out the enemy.
Yep. And I thought that was cool.
The aspect of doing that, it's the same thing that they do in a James Bond movie. It's a prologue. It sets you up. It changes your expectations of what you're going to see. The old school James Bond movies, you have this ridiculous opening sequence that's a gunfight chase scene skiing across tables. I mean, it's just this ridiculous over-the-top action sequence that you get involved in the first 5 minutes in this just
you're
ridiculous
invested.
Scene.
Yep.
And if you're still with
and
it...
And you're expecting the same consistency throughout.
It's a forced suspension of disbelief. That if you have bought into what you just saw,
then you're good for the rest of the
movie. You're going to be good for the rest of the movie. All We're right. going to do some it's basically saying, you see this? More crazy shit like this is coming. Go with it.
Absolutely.
Right, I got to ask the question then. Got to ask the question. Your favorite scene of the movie. Daryl points out that the point of the extreme visuals is to make you remember. And this movie has more extreme visuals than I think any movie I have ever seen.
And all owing back to Miller's original work, too.
Yeah, definitely. What's your favorite?
Oh, my favorite scene in the whole film is, we talked about this earlier, and it was Leonidas running out from the charge. Absolutely. The whole battle where he's probably killing 20 Persians in a row, and the camera's zooming in and out, and it's literally mimicking the action that you get in a comic page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was badass.
That's up there with the great fight scenes I've seen in films.
I think for me it was when he wounded the immortal. It was the culmination of everything leading up to that point. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you knew he wasn't really kneeling down. You know, you knew that whatever we were seeing.
Talk about wounding Xerxes. You said,
yeah, when he wounded Xerxes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. When he clipped him. And
that was badass because it set up the scene where it was so monumental that they drew blood.
Yeah.
And that was badass.
You draw blood from a god. And at which point, I mean, at that point, Leonidas wins, yep. Period. I mean, no matter what happens
such,
after that.
Such a marginal victory, we won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Adam, what was your scene?
For me, it was the beginning scene where he comes back after killing the wolf, and they've got the entire courtyard, and he's wearing the wolf pelt, and everybody kneels down to him, and then everybody is absolutely stone still. And it's just like this, it's almost like painting, but you've got the snow driving in. To me, that was a badass scene, just because it was so... When I read a book and I see a scene like that, that's how I almost envision the book looking. Like, everybody is stationary, but you see the weather still pounding away at it. The visuals... Once again, the visuals were so fantastic.
Well, high marks to Zack Snyder and for having the know-how to put this thing on screen the way it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it gives everybody high hopes for Watchmen when it comes out. Believe me, it's coming out.
I don't think that it's not coming
out. And for those that have not seen it, and I highly recommend it, his first film, the remake of Dawn of the Dead, is well worth the time and effort.
Is that the one with the mall?
Yes.
The new one with Vin Rames?
Yes.
Yeah, that was really good, by the way.
I mean, it's up there with Romero's original, as far as I'm concerned. So, after this, I can't wait to see what Zack Snyder does after Watchmen. I mean, I would like to see him maybe eventually come back and maybe do something quiet, just so he can say he's done it.
It will be interesting to see if he can do it.
Intense.
Well, it would be interesting to see if he can do it.
Because some people can do the big, but they can't do the small.
Exactly.
I can't.
And that's a quote for you. Clip that one out. They can do the big, but they can't do the small. I'm just saying.
Well, it seems to me, though, that anybody who's got the opportunity to do the big has probably done enough with the small to kind of get their name out there.
You know, it's like doing it's like doing comedy, though. Comedy is tough. Comedy is really hard to do, and not everybody can pull it off. Doing quiet moments when you're used to doing big and overblown. I don't know that I could trust Michael Bay with a quiet talky drama.
Michael Bay is one guy though too, and Zack Snyder so far is batting 2 for 2. Watchmen more than likely is going to be 3 for 3, and Dawn of the Dead. There's a few great human moments inside of that. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's still a balls to the wall zombie film.
Yeah,
I love zombies. Just putting that on.
I just want to know, are we going to see Dr. Manhattan's blue junk?
Yes, you are.
What? Well, there you go.
Yes, you are. It's briefly in the trailer.
You know the new Superman movie? They had to CGI shrink down Superman's
junk? Absolutely, yeah, I heard about that, yeah.
I liked it. That's common knowledge around here. God damn, I got to stop hanging out with movie people. Anyway, Dale brings up a good point. Best line from the movie?
I don't know. They're all so over the top and ridiculous.
Well, this is Sparta, of course, and tonight we dine in hell. The most popular lines in the film.
I think the most clever line was when I can't think of who it was said. Well, then we'll fight in the shade.
That's historical, right. Though.
And that was just well played. That scene was. It was tight because it happened in conversation. It wasn't as measured and over the top as...
There wasn't like a 30-second scene to build up to just that line.
It wasn't Gerard Butler saying it either.
That's very true.
With the exception of his conversation with his wife, 90% of his lines were screamed.
But that
was appropriate in context.
Over-exaggerating
I could be a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like this movie screams exaggeration.
No, he has his, he has his points where he is calmly talking to his men, too. So, yeah. I can't necessarily nail down a certain line.
Neither can I. I think probably my favorite line, my favorite dialogue or interaction in the movie is when Leonidas goes out to speak to Xerxes by himself, And Cersei's like, hey, listen, all you gotta do is kneel and this goes away. And he's like, oh, man, my knees hurt.
Yeah.
I've been fighting all day. I've been killing your troops all day, so I'm a little sore, you know? Not as limber as I used to be.
Yeah.
That whole exchange was, I think, pretty funny.
I think one of the more interesting sequences in the movie for me was when she went to Athens. When she went
she never goes anywhere.
Who was it that was?
That was the Spartan Council.
Was it the Spartan Council?
It was the Spartan Council. Gorgo didn't leave Sparta at all.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, before the Spartans died.
Right.
Then I completely didn't understand why the hell that happened that way. That made no sense to me, if that's what it was.
Because
I thought
she
was in Athens.
Basically because,
and if it was in Athens, it made sense.
Because they didn't send the army to war. His 300 Spartans weren't there to fight.
Well, I know that.
Right. But she was trying to convince the Spartan Senate to send the actual Spartan army.
And as revered, I guess, or as
okay.
as we saw Spartan women
right.
being handled, but they
then this is then this is
politics. They were still weren't necessarily allowed into the mix.
This also breaks from the politics of Sparta the way it was. So that's I guess that's where my projecting of history onto onto the movie skewed because they're projecting modern history onto it.
You know,
and
Tony,
it throws it off.
'Twas only an eye. The gods saw fit to grant me
another.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That was ridiculous.
That was ridiculous.
All
right, that's my favorite line from the movie.
It all, but those guys, everyone makes it sound so cool when they're saying what they're saying.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean,
everybody's a badass.
You say that in this context, and it seems completely ridiculous. Once you're that far into the movie and that bought in, it's like, yeah! I mean,
right.
Okay, all right. Earlier in the conversation on the backseat producers, somebody tossed out on the table, is this the best comic book movie you've ever seen?
No.
I think it's
the most faithful it's the most faithful telling from a comic book. It's not the best comic book.
Are you going to toss Dark Knight on there?
I don't
classify Dark Knight as a comic book movie.
I can't necessarily nail down a best at all on
yeah, I mean stuff.
There's a number one of great examples.
It depends on what you're calling a comic book movie. It depends on how you're qualifying it. If you're talking about, is it the most faithful telling where, the previous medium was a graphic novel? Probably. I mean, it's between that and Sin City. I mean,
they're as faithful as they get.
A lot more faithful than that. Was it the best movie? I'm going to say no. Because it wasn't a great movie. It pulled off what it was trying to do very well.
Yep. Don't disagree.
That doesn't necessarily qualify it as a great film. So
I won't disagree with that. And I agree that this is the most comic booky feeling movie to me. Arguably, it
doesn't feel like a comic book. This movie does not feel like it does not give me the experience of reading a comic book.
Well,
not the same way as movies like Unbreakable has, because that movie gave me the feeling of reading a comic book without ever having read that comic book before, mm-hmm. which is something that I don't get that feeling from this.
We'll have to do an M. Night movie night.
We'll do Unbreakable. Show.
Thing.
Unbreakable is awesome.
Unbreakable is awesome.
Science has move skill children move.
What?
Did you see Signs?
Signs, sure.
Yeah, Signs.
What's his face? Johnny Cash. What the hell's his name? Phoenix? Not River Phoenix. What the hell's like his name?
Joaquin Phoenix.
The best line.
Where the hell are you going with that?
The best
Johnny line. Cash. What? When did Anthony show up?
Walk the line, come on.
I know what you're
saying. His best line of the movie is like, move school children, they're watching TV and like all these kids are in the way of like whatever aliens are. Move school children, move. She's yelling at the TV. Best line of that movie.
Yeah, it I think if you're strictly talking translation, Stingray,
yeah. That is like 10 chats in a row.
Everybody else is scared
Somebody
off by it.
Somebody get that guy a Valium.
Yeah, I wouldn't qualify as this is the best comic book movie I've seen. Because it wasn't typical as a comic book. I mean,
I can't disagree with that.
I mean, RoboCop can be described as a comic book movie. It all depends.
Well, you can throw out any number of films. You can go to Road to Perdition.
Well,
you can throw out.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about sensibility about, as opposed Dark to Man. Is it a straight Dark Man? Was started off as a film before it got translated into a comic later on,
right?
Much like RoboCop did.
But Dark Man's basically a comic book origin story.
Absolutely.
And it works very well as that. It feels like a comic book.
So, it's... I don't know. Like I said, it's always hard to kind of nail something down as the best.
It doesn't give me the feel of a comic book, though, in that the tropes of a comic book are not present.
Okay.
So that's... I guess that's what my point was.
I don't...
Talking for the last 5 minutes, and you're not going to disagree, because you never not disagree. You always not disagree.
This was somebody else's question. I didn't actually have anywhere to go with it, so...
Are you lonely?
This may be predictable to everybody around the table, but after 5 beers and an hour, I really have to pee, so...
Actually, after 2 waters, and I've kind of
All right, so... Are we going to call this one done?
I think we are, but we need to really pick a movie from...
Well, just for those that may not have seen this, see it.
If you're listening to the spoiler section, I hope you
Yeah.
Will. Still,
as far as people to recommend it to, though, you have to have a bit of a stomach. It is a hyper-stylized violent film.
Absolutely.
You're already drunk, Stingray.
Add a piece, take a drink. It was a cartoon, though, wasn't it?
The Max was on MTV.
On MTV.
It was on MTV.
Yep.
You're looking at me like you're going to argue this with me.
I know
you're
not.
By the way, born 83.
Yeah, I know.
That's 1983.
Punk.
Yeah, just wait till we stick some more movies from the 60s down. Where you just
All right. Unfortunately, Big List of Movies is on the other laptop.
Oh.
So I can't look at it.
Well, you know what we may do? We may clean up the villains thing and release it after this.
Perhaps.
Maybe we have to do.
I'll have to work on that.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do with the villains.
If nothing else, it can be a bonus episode.
Jackie Chan Adventures.
What? Jackie Chan Adventures.
That was a good cartoon. Kill any man who says otherwise.
I didn't really see it, so I really can't comment on it.
Well, good. I'm about to kill you, Tony.
Born 71 over here.
God, it's sad being the oldest guy in the room.
Hey, normally it's me. I'm glad you're here.
If it makes you feel any better, I'm usually never the oldest guy in the room.
Born 62, so there you go.
There you go. Grab one of those $5 DVDs, the 5 Jackie Chan movies on it.
Stingray, you keep commenting, you're dragging this out, I gotta pee. You're kidding me. I have to pee so bad my nuts hurt.
Well, one thing is, I'm glad both of you guys really enjoyed this, too. I mean, that was, that's good to hear.
I enjoyed it. So, I guess the question now becomes, when are you coming back?
We'll see.
That's a lame answer.
I can't do this regularly, but definitely I would like to join you guys again. You do Grindhouse anytime soon. I'm here.
Big List of Movies. Mm-hmm. We'll add it to the list when it gets resurrected from the other machine.
Put a Kubrick movie on the fire. I'm here. You know. I kind of wish I was here on Taxi Driver, just to straighten you out a little bit.
The good thing about Kubrick movies is there aren't going to be any more of them.
No, but he made the
We've got a finite list.
Yeah, and the last
Kubrick movies that we can intersect.
And the last DVD release of Eyes Wide Shut restored a lot of nudity.
Oh, did they?
I'm man, I'm in.
All that, yeah, European, man. All the stuff that was CGI'd
such a bad
over was...
edit.
Did you know that vaginas are always serious?
They've always been in my book.
Say, did you hear the Goonies episode? Because that's where that comes from. Vaginas are always serious.
Yeah, that Goonies was one that wasn't one of my favorites when I saw it. So.
Dr. Luke is turning over in his
sleep,
whatever.
Turning over in his playing of video games.
All right. Let's go ahead and wrap this up with the promise of nothing next week because we were too lazy to select something.
It'll be a surprise.
I got to thank you guys for letting me come out here and play with you. I would love to do it again.
Save that one for a quote.
Well, the invitation is always open. Yeah, to provide content absolutely. That makes us legitimate. So
you keep the scroll moving on the.
You and Edward, what the hell, man? You're gonna have to either get on the live forum or Skype in or something. Dude.
Yeah, we're gonna need to get Edward here.
I met somehow. Him at DragonCon, by the way.
Well, I keep meaning to ask.
He's every bit as awesome in person as he is online.
Very
so
cool.
This weekend, the reviews will probably be coming up for An American Carol. And blindness. So
actually, they'll probably be out by the time that this drops.
Yeah, that'll be like a week or like.
Okay, well, I can't even. Yeah, that you're right. So, I can't remember what is opening after that.
Podcasting is a temporal displacement.
Absolutely, it is.
It's time travel.
It's time travel in its own way. Yes.
Which draws Adam to it even more.
I love time travel movies.
Well, and time and romance. I listen to the show.
So what's a good time travel
romance? When is time after time after time?
How is Back to the Future not time travel romance?
Have you ever seen Time After Time?
No.
Malcolm McDowell is H.G. Wells.
Oh man, he's Linderman.
Right. And he actually
very good.
He
Adam.
Actually, he actually, yeah. Well, before that, he was.
Did you like how I picked his most recent role?
Right.
Like the biggest roles, like he's done.
No,
like
no, the most
famous
Clockwork Orange, and of course, he was Caligula too. But
Caligula.
He was Caligula.
That's awesome.
We're not going to talk about Keanu Reeves. not this time.
It's called
Time After
Lake
Time.
House.
Time After Time. Yes. Malcolm McDowell's H.G. Wells, and he is actually. Before he wrote the book, he invents the time machine, and he travels to the future. It's pure fantasy.
I'll put it on the list.
Directed by Nicholas Meyer, who gave us Star Trek II and
the good one.
Yeah,
the good one.
Well, and six was good too. And
there was a couple of good Star Trek movies.
I actually really like Star Trek. Well, Nicholas Meyer also did The Day After, and he did. Great Sherlock Holmes film, 7% Solution. I would recommend Time After Time highly, and knowing you that liking time travel and romance. Oh man, I gotta think back to that one. I can't remember. I know Alan Arkin is in it, but I think Arkin is Watson, but I can't remember who played.
It's Jeremy Brett.
Say what?
Was it Jeremy Brett?
No.
This guy right here has an unnatural fascination with Sherlock Holmes.
7%.
And has an unnatural fascination with Jeremy Brett as Sherlock Holmes. Whom I will put on the table as the definitive Sherlock Holmes until Hugh Laurie comes to reprise role later as Dr. House. Oh, wait! They're the same character.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, I don't think 7%'s on DVD yet. I'm not for sure.
No, believe me, Stingray, I am squirming in the seat like you could not believe.
And he will run. He'll make a dash once we say we're done.
You know how in Mario Kart, if you push the accelerator at the right times, you shoot out of the game?
And don't Stingray, as soon as he's done, I'm next. So.
Then, all right, let's go ahead and wrap this up.
All right.
Well, thanks again, guys. This was a lot of fun.
Dire over
yes,
here.
It is.
This was a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. It was cool having you out.
You need to get out here more often.
Oh, well.
Yep. We love having company.
Absolutely.
Well,
And while our third is... off doing his, you know, adventures in Africa or whatever.
Well, I got to come out to meet Anthony or Tony number two.
The next time he comes back.
Yeah. Yep. We'll have a big one.
Absolutely.
Plans are good for, like, Christmas break, somewhere around there. Like, work slows down. Nobody's doing much of work.
We'll figure something out.
Yep.
All right. See you guys next week with something.
See ya.